Bob McCallum. This is John Shannon with you. Another day. Another
okay, we need a health update. Robert, how are you?
Not good, John.
Really?
It's in my ears now. Now I have this humming, buzzing, and this annoying sound. And oh no, that's me.
I'll turn my mic off.
Yeah, that's me listening to you. That isn't the cold at all. No, it's a buzz in my ear. It's driving me nuts. But fortuitously, we're still here. Yes. Today, we're going to chat about a bunch of issues with Matthew Schneider, the former NHL player, and for quite some time, a key member of the Players Association, special assistant to Don Fehr now. And Matthew has been at the epicenter of a lot of things that have been going on, not the least of which, are they or aren't they going to go to Beijing for the Olympics? And we'll have an opportunity to chat with him when we come back after these messages. McCowan and Shannon back with you, and we're joined by Matthew Schneider, the special assistant to Don Fehr at the Players Association. Thanks for joining us. You're still in LA. I gather you haven't been back to Canada very much over the last year and a half, huh?
No, I was in the bubble in Edmonton a couple of years ago now. I can't even put it in perspective for time, but I was in Vancouver this year earlier in the year, but that was about it. It's been a while since I've been back to Toronto.
The last couple of years are a bit of a blur, aren't they?
They are. It's been a lot of challenges we've been dealing with.
Well, let's talk about a bunch of them. The one that's most predominant in terms of conversation has been the participation in the Olympics. I don't have to tell you that. And this is something that clearly the Players Association thought was an important thing for them. And we understand why. It was at least a significant part, maybe the most significant part of the agreement that you signed last year with the National Hockey League. And the latest from Mr. Bettman is the players will decide whether to go to Beijing or not. Well, I gather as a group you're talking about it. How do you feel right now about the chances of that happening?
Well, I think it'd be very difficult to put a number on it. Percentage wise, but it's different country to country. I think you're depending on who you talk to, younger guys versus older guys versus family guys. It's just I try my best to put myself in their shoes. Right now it's really been about trying to get as many answers to open-ended questions as we can to give guys the best information possible. No different than any other things that we do at the PA. It's really trying to make sure that guys have are educated on the matters that they can make the best decision possible. This one's tricky too, because you're dealing with, in a normal sense, when we're talking about something like collective bargaining, we have our executive committee made up of player rep on all 32 teams. And we come to a consensus on the board, and that's after guys go and talk to their teammates. This is different because you're dealing with a group of players, a minority of players that are participating, and there isn't really a process that we have in place. So we're really just trying to do the best we can again to make sure the players have all the information before heading over there. And we had our first couple of calls with players yesterday. We had two conference calls. I think we had a little over 70 players on those calls, and addressing what our major concerns are at the moment.
What kinds of things did you talk about? Did you tell them?
It's really I think the primary concern is around COVID. It's around health and safety of players and potential quarantines, and what can happen if things go sideways when guys test positive going over there. And those are still questions that are outstanding that we haven't gotten, I guess, satisfactory answers on, maybe, if you would. up until now, and we're hoping that we can get better answers in the not too distant future.
Well, who would you be dealing and who would you be asking those questions to, and how much information do you feel you have?
Well, so right now, Rob Zepp has been, who's a former goalie, played in the league and played 9 years in Germany. He's been our point person dealing with the double IHF and their general counsel. The double IHF is dealing with the IOC. The IOC is dealing with BOCOG, the Chinese organizing committee. So we haven't had direct communication. You know, I think that's certainly an issue. I know Don has been talking to on and off to a couple of people at the IOC, but it's been most of the communication has gone back and forth through Rob Zepp and the double IHF. We just received the second playbook from the Chinese, which would, I guess, one of our major concerns is how long or if what the maximum quarantine would be for a player. It's as it stands now, it seems to be up to the Chinese authorities, a panel made up of 10 Chinese doctors and I believe 5 international doctors. I think it's safe to say that that there is no certainty when it comes to what the outcome might be as it stands right now.
And if you do contact COVID while you're in China, where would you quarantine, Matthew?
Another open-ended issue. I think there are quarantine hotels, I believe, that they have in place. But we don't have solid information on that, which is a concern.
The players presumably would be staying in the village, correct?
Yes. And there's no question that it'll be a tightly controlled bubble. So, you know, if you were to compare it to, say, when we went to Sochi, it was the last time that we participated in the Olympics. The players stayed in the village. I would say pretty much all the players had family members attending, whether it was wives or parents or things along those lines. We had a complete hotel that was dedicated to all the players' families. We had player lounges at the arena and at the hotel, and felt like a very safe environment. Everything was controlled. And I think that's the main thing. We had control over so much of what happened. I think the feeling that we have right now is that if things do start to go sideways, just that we would not have a whole lot of control over things once that happened.
One of the things that's come up is the suggestion that if a player tests positive, the duration that they may be mandated to remain in China could be as long as 5 weeks. Is that accurate?
Yes. Based on the information that we have now, there is the ability for a player to test out. If you're asymptomatic, apologize for the dogs in the background.
That's quite all right.
Asymptomatic and 2 negative tests back-to-back days, it would be possible to test out in that scenario, but it would still be subject to the panel of doctors that would have the final say whether a COVID positive patient could leave China.
So, and Matthew, the other concern was, as I understand it, that if a player has to quarantine and misses games in the NHL, the teams are not bound to pay him. So there's money from the Federation set aside. Is that correct?
Yeah, I know Bill Daly reiterated that the other day. The double IHF put together or dedicated $5 million fund that would be able to be paid to players if they are forced to stay back and quarantine and miss games in the NHL, or for whatever reason, due to COVID, they miss games.
So is that enough?
I don't know. You do the math. I don't know how far that goes.
Well, the answer to that question would be how many players and for how long, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, these are all highly paid players. If you're talking a few days, which seems unlikely, for a couple of players, it's probably plenty of money.
Yeah.
If you have a mass outbreak, then you got a real issue, economic issue as well. And we've just seen the Calgary Flames. Where are they at now, John?
They're at nine players today. Yeah.
And it's not unreasonable. I think you would acknowledge that if a player is infected, the chances of that, of him carrying that to teammates is pretty high.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, when you look at just the last week or so, potentially being the Omicron variant, not only in hockey, but in football, we saw yesterday, there are a lot of positive cases. Seems to be moving more quickly. I mean, there's the chance that it's taken out of all of our hands anyway, eventually, that, things just go sideways here at home. But it's concerning. There's no question about it. I think, before heading over there, we're getting closer and closer to the date, and there's, more and more cause for concern on that front, for sure.
So you talk about two calls yesterday. You're having another call tomorrow, but you expect more calls to continue through that January 10th deadline?
Absolutely. I think I don't think players. We're fortunate that we were able to negotiate the opt-out deadline to be pushed back as far as it was. I think there was an understanding on all sides that. There was still a lot of things that were up in the air, but COVID being the main concern for everyone. Players want to get as much information as they can before making any decisions. A couple of players have opted out, taking their names off the long list. But I would say the feedback that we got yesterday was, fairly consistent from all the players. It was really like, it's an awful lot of information taken at one time. And, we're hoping that we can get some more concrete answers that they can make decisions on. So, I think early in the year, there were fewer outbreaks and fewer cases. Mm-hmm. I think guys felt a certain way. I think as the cases have picked up here lately, I think there's a little more concern.
Matthew, well, you talked about early on in discussions with families. You're a former player. I'm sure you had lots of discussions with your wife and your parents even about certain things in your life. What would your understanding be of a player's discussions with their spouses and their families about going to the Olympics?
I think it's a risk reward. It's playing in the Olympics is a chance of a lifetime, and not every player will get multiple chances to play. I think when you look at the landscape of our membership right now, I think of the young stars like Connor and Austin that haven't had a chance to represent their country in a best on best tournament. I know, number one, they're chomping at the bit, and they're dying for the chance to get that opportunity. And I also think that they're going to be able to have that opportunity in the future. I think they understand that as well. Then you talk about maybe some of the older veteran players that this might be their last chance. Think of maybe a John Tavares that got hurt in Sochi, or guys like that that have the opportunity to go and play one last time for Canada in the Olympics, and what's going through their minds. He has a young family Connor and Austin don't. You know, the Russians are looking at it differently than the Americans, and the Canadians look at it differently than the Finns. So, you know, there's just a lot of there are a lot of different things to consider. And, you know, we're really trying to make sure that guys, again, goes back to making sure that guys have the best, most accurate information. And for us at the PA, I think, you know, it just really comes down, the biggest concern is the health and safety concern. And, you know, I know playing in the Olympics, one of the best things for me was having my family there. And we were in Torino, and my wife and kids, my in-laws, and my mom was there. And, you know, it was just, it's just a wonderful experience to have your family around. And I thought there were going to be guys that might not want to go when that announcement was made that the families weren't going to be able to come, or guests. And although players were disappointed, to a player, they all wanted to be there. They all wanted to have the opportunity to play. And I think that really speaks volumes about where we are now. So it is going to maybe be a last minute decision, but I think guys are going to want to have the different options laid out for them.
There's a point here that needs, I think, clarification. And that is this an individual decision on the part of each of the members of the PA, or is this a collective decision? And can you, number one, can you prevent a player who wants to go to the Olympics from going if no one else goes? Is there a vote? Is it a majority decision? Is it, 70%? What's the process in making the call? And is it individual or collective, Matthew?
Well, I guess it goes back to, you know, kind of where we started. We talked about, you know, how we're set up with player reps and under normal circumstances. And this is an outlier, no question about it. So that's something that we're going to have to make a decision on, talk through with our veteran leadership. And, you know, I guess, you know, part of what goes into the equation too is, you know, there isn't a real plan to play, I think, many games if we didn't go for argument's sake, if we decide, or player, you know, we get a majority of players decide they don't want to go, or all players decide they don't want to go. There is not a plan to play many games throughout the 3-week break. I think there would be, based on our conversations with the league and with Bill Daly, there would be some games sprinkled in to try to alleviate some of the pressure on teams on the back end of their schedule that might have difficult schedules, depending on building availability and other things. But we haven't come to a final decision yet on whether it's an all or nothing or an individual decision. And that's going to come through a lot of conversations over the next week or two with the players.
If one player said he wanted to go and everybody else said they didn't, can you prevent that player from going?
I don't think there's anything that could prevent that player from going at this point. You know, I guess if he missed games due to that, would there be any? I at this point, I think with the agreements that are in place, I don't think there is anything that could stop the player. I would leave room that I could be corrected on that, though.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is that question alone might have a different ramification for a European player as opposed to a North American player, don't you think?
Yeah, there's no question there. You know, depending on what country you're representing, there would be an awful lot of different things that go into the equation. But I definitely think that I'd have a hard time believing that you're going to stop Alex Ovechkin from going to play at this point, you know.
What do you know about the status of the positive tests and outbreak in Beijing itself? We've certainly seen an uptick in North America. We have a new varietal that is presenting some concern. It supposedly spreads faster, is more contagious. What do you know about the situation in Beijing itself? Trust what you hear?
No, it's very little. It's a great question, Bob. We don't know very much. We were supposed to have updates on a regular basis, which we have not had, which is another cause for concern. There's no question about it.
So what questions that you say you haven't had answered, what questions have you gone back to Rob Zepp or through the Federation to ask?
Well, there are some open-ended travel issues. When the U.S. Announced that they were going to enforce a diplomatic boycott, Canada follows suit, obviously. But Air China can no longer fly in and out of the United States or Canada, I believe. And that was the carrier that we were working with. And travel's up in the air right now. I don't know if we'll be able to get direct flights into Beijing or there'll be connections or whether through private charters or airlines that are currently flying in and out of whether it's Tokyo or Hong Kong or different. So we're working on that. I know the IOC is pushing as well. They have been pushing the Chinese organizing committee for putting a maximum number of days quarantine for players. And that's been, I think, a bigger challenge. I think, you know, the IOC definitely wants it. And obviously the IIHF and we're pushing for that really hard. So, it's still, as Bob mentioned, open-ended, where it could be up to 5 weeks based on the Chinese rules and laws around COVID right now, their protocols. So, things are subject to change and we're going to continue to push for more satisfactory conditions.
You talked about the Olympic experience in Sochi. I go back all the way back to Nagano with the original NHL teams, and the players they loved playing the games, but they almost glowed about living in the village, whether it be Nagano or where you were in Torino or Vancouver or Sochi. I mean, when the boys rode their bike from the village to the arena, that was kind of different. But what do you understand the village experience will be like in Beijing?
I was in Nagano too, John. It just we didn't have a stellar tournament there.
No. That's right. I should remember that. I'm sorry, Matthew. I should remember.
No, that's okay. It was a long time ago, John. I think the village life is definitely going to be different. I believe all the different countries, I think, are going to be isolated amongst themselves. That's our understanding. Unlike other years, we haven't had a chance to go over and see the accommodations as well. I know myself and a couple other former players have been over there playing the China games in the last few years leading up to the pandemic. So we have a general sense of the lay of the land, and we've done some virtual tours on Zoom calls and things like that. But we haven't really gotten a great look into what, day-to-day life would be like for the athletes. I was on a call earlier this morning with the World Players Association, a union of unions, if you will, out of Europe, and trying to get more information about Japan and what life was like there and some of the differences that we're going to be facing from the Summer Olympics to the Winter Olympics as well. So it's really a lot of information gathering now and trying to make the situation, a certainty rather than have just open-ended issues the way that they're currently sitting.
With what's gone on with the WTA and Peng Shuai, any concerns from the Players Association perspective on that, on the political side of being in China?
Yeah, there definitely are. I think the athlete community, I think is generally very, very supportive of each other and tight throughout all sports. And when something like that arises, I think it raises eyebrows for everyone. I think there's just an awful lot that we don't know. I think there's still an awful lot of concern. There's no question about it. And from my understanding, I know that there were the video that she released and she said she was fine and everything was okay. But my understanding is that there are some of her contemporaries that have tried to reach out and get a hold of her, haven't been able to. But that's secondhand, third-hand information. And that's, I think there's a lot of concern that whole situation is going on as well.
We got to take a break, but a final point on this. I brought it up the other day. I assume there hasn't been any conversation about a World Cup if the players don't go to Beijing. And I guess a World Cup is not the same as an Olympics, albeit it is the at least as high a level of competition, arguably even higher. It's a little bit more premium. There are potential economic benefits, potentially to the individual player and certainly to the association. Has there been any conversation about maybe a 2023-2024 World Cup if the players decide not to go to Beijing?
Absolutely. The plan was always to continue with the World Cup after the World Cup that we had in Toronto back in 2016. And when things went sideways with the Korean Games, it got sidetracked, unfortunately. But there's definitely interest on our side and the league side to bring that back and to build that property and to grow it. I think it's in our best interest, the players' best interest, and the league's best interest. I think it's in hockey's best interest to have that ongoing, regular, best-on-best competition. And, I think we've collectively dropped the ball is we haven't done that on a regular basis. And I think there's a strong appetite for that to happen coming very soon.
As a former player, can you put in context what it would mean to you, when you were playing a World Cup versus an Olympics?
Well, I was extremely fortunate enough to win a World Cup. So it meant an awful lot to me.
1996, right?
Yeah. It was, that was, to me, that was an amazing experience. We had an amazing team at the time. And I think, when you talk to a lot of the young players, I think there was, big part of the inspiration of when they were growing up, similar to my generation that had 1980, the Miracle on Ice, things like that. And I think generally, in Canada, there's always been that expectation of being number one and greatness there. So for American hockey, I think that was it was extremely important. I played in Nagano, I played in Torino. They weren't great outcomes, so the World Cup of hockey was a very special memory for me.
But would you, if I said to you, you have to give up one or the other, you can only go to one or the other, would it have been the Olympics?
Well, today I would say no, going through my role at the Players Association, it's the World Cup. But when I was playing, it would have been in the Olympics for sure.
Okay, fair enough.
That's the business hat versus the helmet talking there, right?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Quick break. Matthew Schneider is with a special assistant to Don Fehr at the Players Association. We'll be back after these messages. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, Matthew Schneider with us. John, you wanted to go in a slightly different direction.
Yeah, Matthew, it's been a very tough year for lots of people in the hockey world, and no tougher than for a gentleman named Kyle Beach. And coming out of what went on in Chicago, there were some pointed accusations to the Players Association and to Don in particular. Perhaps there's a way you can update us. Is there an investigation going on now into what the PA did with the information that Kyle allegedly had passed on?
Yes, there's an investigation going on right now. We have a U.S. law firm that's an third-party independent U.S. law firm that's taken on the investigation, and the executive board came to that conclusion fairly quickly. The investigation into Chicago was specific into Chicago, and I think it was very simple. We were talking about the information guys want to have for the Olympics. It's no different again than anything that we do. Guys want to have as much information as they can to be able to make a decision or to make a recommendation on a path forward. But the investigation should be going through sometime in the first quarter of 22, should be finishing on. It's fairly open-ended on the timeline, but I can't imagine it being going much past the end of January into February, somewhere around there, and then we'll have a report for the board.
And have you had any, has the union had any discussion with Kyle at all since then?
Don was on a call with Kyle and his lawyer shortly after everything broke, when the investigation into the Blackhawks was released and everything the subsequent couple of weeks there. So I think that they had a really good conversation. I think it seemed as though Don and Kyle were happy with the conversation that they had. I wasn't privy to it, but it was, I think at least it was a step in the right direction.
As a former player, what is your feeling about the culture that surrounds this game? And was this an anomaly, or was this something that truly needs to be addressed?
Well, I mean, we've all heard about cases at lower levels in the game, in junior hockey and in other levels. It's disturbing. There's no question about it. I had not, up until now, really heard of anything at professional level. Forget hockey, and pro sports, where an incident like that might have occurred. But I think, I think it leaves a lot of people flabbergasted, really, how something like this could happen. And I think there's certainly needs to be accountability. I think a lot of people have been held accountable up until now, there's an old school mentality, I think, where you just kind of like brush things under the rug, and that you can't do that anymore, I think, on a number of fronts. And I think our players today are much more aware, much more open, and their thoughts, their feelings, and mental health, you know, all these different areas that are affecting our young generations. And I think it's going to make our game better. It's going to force our game to be better. There's no question about it.
John and I were having a brief conversation about this before you came on. I think, John, you indicated there was a meeting, conference call or something.
There have been some calls where there's, you know, the call has gone out to every member of the association, and your attendance on the calls has been rather sparse. Like if there's 750 members, less than 100 are on the call. How concerning is, and I don't want to call it, I guess you'd call it apathy, but how concerning is that for you, Matthew, when you don't get as many members of the union involved in things like this?
Well, I would say a couple of things. One, I think the more things change, the more they stay the same. I don't think that's ever been really different.
You had this when you were a player?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, it's challenging, you know, especially when, you know, things are under normal circumstances, when you're not in the middle of collective bargaining. When there isn't a crisis going on or major event, players have a short off season, very focused. I also think that our former players on staff or divisional player reps do a great job and are in constant communication with their teams and their players. All the time, you know. We have some really great player reps that, you know, have been around for a long time now. Guys that have been really involved, whether it's in competition committee, any of the various committees, return to play committees that we put together, and you know, generally speaking, you know, the majority of the players really rely on a smaller core group of players that are more engaged and more involved. And, I would say, you know, the same things go on in other unions, but it doesn't necessarily mean that players are not educated. I think they're probably as educated as they have ever been across all of the major sports. And, there's an expectation that, you know, the group of leaders that are very involved are going to be there and make sure that everyone else is up to speed and up to date and making decisions based off of good information that they're getting. And there's an awful lot of trust that's involved as well, you know. And I was on the other side as a player. I went through pretty much everything you can imagine as a player, strikes, lockouts, being sent to the minors, being traded, going to the Olympics, playing all of those different things. And, there's still things as these last couple of years have illustrated that pop up that no amount of experience is really going to guide you through it. But communication is key. Like being able to talk and get guys open and honest feelings is a key to building consensus.
Before we let you go, one of the other things John suggested we chat a little bit about, and I think it's probably a little premature to make any kind of sound evaluation, but you have new television partners in America in ESPN and TNT. I'm sure that you have been paying attention to what they've been doing. What do you think of it? Are you happy with it?
Oh, it's very early. And I think there's a lot of excitement amongst players. There's no question about it. One of the things that we did early in the process is we reached out to ESPN at a high level, Don, myself, and TNT, obviously. Ron Hainsey just retired. He's been working with TNT, ESPN, and Rogers in Canada really trying to make sure that there's a great relationship built among between the broadcasters and the players, because I think that's something that was that has been missing for a long period of time. You know, there needs to be a trust, I think, from the players that that, you know, the broadcasters are trying to show them in the best light possible. I know ESPN has done some great stuff and some stories, trying to tell players stories off the ice, get fans to understand who they are a little bit better. But we have an awful lot of work to do, and I'm very confident after a lot of the conversations that we've had with all three of the organizations, all three of the broadcasters, that we're all on the same page. We're all headed in the right direction. And, you know, we have a lot of work to do at the PA as well, as far as making sure our guys are available and out there and being active and, you know, promoting themselves, promoting the game. These guys, both ESPN and TNT, have done incredible work in other sports and building their own brands. And I think our guys are very optimistic that the same thing's going to happen for us over the next few years.
To my chagrin, one of the things that we've seen, certainly with Rodgers, is an abandonment of feature material during games, particularly between periods. They have essentially abandoned that for a bunch of talking heads sitting in a studio telling us their opinions on things we all saw. Now, as a guy who's been one of those talking heads for the last almost 50 years, I guess I'm conflicted here a little bit, but is your perception that ESPN and TNT are doing enough in that regard to give the players an opportunity or the audience an opportunity to get to know these players, and not by a, you know, two question interview while they got a towel around their neck between periods? You know, you went,
you get to keep the towel though, Bob.
Sorry. Yeah. You get a free towel. Yeah. That's great. Bunch of guys making $5 million a year need a free towel.
You'd be shocked how many people ask for one, right, Matthew?
Well, there's,
I'm sure Jack Matthew's Armstrong. Got one.
I got a couple of towels.
I'll bet you do.
Yeah, sure you do.
We've all got a bunch of crap that we've been given. Look at the reason people go to the Academy Awards isn't, you know, to get an award. It's to get the goodie bag.
Yeah.
You know,
I understand where you're going, Bob. And I think, we've had challenges too. I mean, there was little to no content that ESPN and TNT had coming into this.
Yeah. Yeah, they had nothing to work off. Yeah. No.
And COVID has limited their ability to content and create content. It's something that we're extremely cognizant of and we're working on. And you know, I'm hopeful and optimistic that we'll be able to do more in the off season this year with ESPN. I mean, we've talked about having players come through studios, whether they're out here in LA or back east in Boston or New York. You know, obviously we're not in Atlanta anymore, which is another one stop on my train with TNT. But TNT on the social media front with Bleacher Report, they're very excited. But I think it's really going to be access to players and making sure that's what we're focused on, is really telling player stories, I think if we want to grow the fan base, that's how we're going to do it. And we have such a diverse membership, guys that are interested in so many different facets of life that have nothing to do with hockey, and to be able to try to, you know, reach out and create fans, in different ways is part of really what we've been talking to players a lot about over this past year.
That's part of obviously, I would assume that's part of the player tours that I think you've done 30 of 32 teams. Forget about the Olympics, the regular guy that's a member of the union, what would their biggest concerns be that would be brought up on your player tours?
I think a lot of our fall tour meeting has been focused on the economics this year. And, this is the first time in 2 years we've been able to do a player tour and hold in-person meetings. So we have guys in the league that we really haven't gotten in front of until now, some of the young players. It's really trying to educate them about the economics right now and what the next few years look like. Obviously, there's a large amount of debt, which is going to affect the cap and the cap not going up for the next couple of years very much. But I think makes, the things that we're looking at doing with the broadcasters and marketing and promoting makes it all that much more important. And our efforts to try to grow revenue, get back to where we were and then surpass that. We've always talked about the marketing and promotion of players being a priority for us. So, I think we're excited about the future, but there's definitely an awful lot of work that needs to be done.
Well, we'll let you get at it. There is indeed a lot of work that has to be done, and we'll all be anxiously paying attention to the decisions that are made first about Beijing. And I know that's going to be a tough one. We thank you very much for your time, Matthew, as you know, and we don't see you, and we probably won't. We wish you a happy holiday season, and hopefully we'll have a chance to chat not too far down the road. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Matthew Schneider of the NHL Players Association. John and I will be back after these messages. Our thanks to Matthew Schneider for joining us. Nice to see him. And
Did you have any interaction with him when he was a Maple Leaf player?
Not much.
No?
But you know me.
I know. I thought he might have gone to the bar across the street, right?
Well, he may very well have. But that was... Well, what year did he play? What year?
I can't remember.
Well, neither can I.
It's a long time.
So here's the two things. And for those that aren't aware, I used to own a restaurant. It's not a bar. It was a restaurant.
Yes.
You may have come in and done nothing but drink.
I always went there for the food.
But other people did. And... Sorry. But here's the dilemma. Even if you told me when he played, I can't remember when I owned the joint.
Oh,
I really don't remember the year. I remember Gilmore was there. That's all I remember.
Yes, we're well aware.
If you look it up, Dougie look up there. The year that, oh my gosh, what's his name? I'm just blanking on the guy's name, the singer who played Maple Leaf Gardens.
Meatloaf.
Come on. That's
yeah. Where you said hi, Mr.
If you can
Loaf.
Find out if you got a ticket stub for Meatloaf at Maple Leaf Gardens, that was the year I owned the joint.
1950.
No, it was not. It was early 90s, I think.
Okay. So
when did the garden shut down? By the way,
do you know that? 1999, February 5th, 1999.
Okay, I'm surprised you know that, but
no, I did know that because I produced the game, so that's why. Hey, based on what you heard
from comment
Matthew,
there?
No. I'm changing the topic. Based on what you heard from Matthew, if you were an odds maker, because you used to be an odds maker, what about the NHL players going to Beijing? What do you think?
Well, I wasn't an odds maker. That's a lie.
Okay.
I reported.
God, just what do you think about going?
Them up. I wouldn't go. I wouldn't go, and I don't think I think the vast majority of them won't go, which is why I asked the question. Of what happens if you've got X number of guys that say I want to go and X number of guys that say I don't want to go.
Yeah. The individual being allowed to go is one that's fascinating. Like Alex Ovechkin being able to go play for the Russian Olympic Committee. That was
you have a problem with that?
No. But I don't think many people have contemplated that, Bob.
Why I brought it up. There seems to be every time I see, the TV heads talking about this stuff,
it seems to be
in the form of the collective. Are they going to go or are they not going to go? And the true answer is how many of them are going to go? Not all are going to go.
Right.
And is it, the question is it going to be 80 or 90% go, or is it going to be 5 or 10% go? I think that's the parameters. And I haven't heard that. I'm not saying it hasn't happened, but I haven't heard that conversation taking place.
Right.
And it's important to understand it. And then now you've got the other reality is the schedule is set. If they don't go to China, everybody gets 3 weeks off basically, unless they start try and stick some games in for teams like the Flames, who are going to miss what, 3 games this week?
Well, at least three. At least three,
maybe more.
And now we're learning more that Carolina has more players coming on the protocol soon. Vancouver's announced 2 players on the protocol. This is a growing concern, not just in hockey, but the Chicago Bulls are in bad shape. The NFL had 37 players in COVID protocol on Sunday and Monday, Bob. This thing is not going away, and the pro sports leagues are trying to be proactive with it, but it's difficult to do.
Think there's any chance real quickly that they shut down? Any league shuts down again?
I think the next step is maybe not shut down, but restricting fans. I think that's the next step. You know, reverting back to that is, in my opinion, the next step.
Well, we're not hearing much talk about it, but I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if that's not forthcoming.
Yeah. By the way, Alex Petrangelo tomorrow too, Bob.
We'll look forward to him. Our thank yous go to Matthew Schneider and to you, the audience, for spending some time with us. We'll do it again tomorrow. Until then, for John Shannon, Bob McCowan. Goodbye, everybody.